Welcome to the NETCO 504 Show, Episode 1, Loan Closing. Very happy to have in the studio today Todd Molliner, General Counsel to NETCO and our Loan Closing Specialist, as well as Jennifer Fowler, who's the Super Specialist here. And Jennifer has been closing a lot of loans, and Todd has been helping her close the loans. And we're excited to get into Episode 1 and to explain to our listeners exactly what the process is. After we've received an application and received the authorization from the SBA, it then goes to our loan closing office or our loan closing specialist, Todd and Jennifer. So today in Episode 1, what we were hoping to do is to have learn a little bit about Todd, a little about Jennifer, a little bit about their families and their education. And then after we've done that, we'll get into a few minutes just of the beginning stages of the loan closing process. And then in subsequent episodes, we'll get into more detail on the loan closing process. So officially, welcome to the show, Todd Molliner and Jennifer Fowler. Great. Great to see you. Let's start with you, Todd. Todd's got a long history here at NETCO. Could you tell the listeners just a little bit about your family and your educational background?
Absolutely. Like a lot of people, I am from small town Nebraska and moved to Lincoln and never left. Grew up in a town of 800 people, went to Doane College, not too far from here. Law school in Lincoln in 2001. I married my high school sweetheart shortly after starting law school, and we have two children who are growing up fast. I lived and worked in Lincoln since I graduated law school in 2004.
2004.
Yeah, and started working for NETCO in some capacity not long after that.
That's right. Uh-huh. And wife Christy is with LPS?
Yes, she's an educator. She has been with LPS for 9 or 10 years and did 9 or 10 years, probably a little bit less, in Crete right after college. She also attended Doane.
Oh. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Both kids in LPS here, one in high school and one soon to be in high school, as this year is already wrapping up for school.
And daughter heading off to college in a year or a year and a half?
That's right. She'll be a senior next year, so she's starting that process of looking at where she wants to go, where she can afford to go.
Oh. Well, importantly. Academically, I think she's going to have some options.
I think she will, yes.
Oh, that's great. And welcome to the show, Jennifer Fowler. Jennifer, tell us a little bit about yourself and your educational background.
Well, I have lived in Lincoln all of my life, unlike other people. I just can't seem to leave, which is fine. Moving's not fun. Oh, wait. I do live in Omaha.
You moved.
I did move. I still live in Nebraska, though. Forgot about that. So I have a son. He's 26, almost 27.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Really strange to say.
Uh-huh. And you both have pets.
No.
You do not.
My kids have a cat.
It's a cat.
None for me, no.
And Jennifer, you have a small dog.
A dog, yep.
Uh-huh. Yep. And Jennifer, your educational background.
I have a bachelor's degree from Bellevue University.
Oh, mm-hmm.
A fun experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, between the two of Todd and Jennifer, I will maintain that we have the top loan closing department of all CDCs in the U.S. So we thank them for all of their great efforts. And, of course, they can always be reached at the NETCO offices at our website, which is www.nedcoloans.org. And their email addresses are jennifer@nedcoloans.org and todd@nedcoloans.org. We will start with the content of the show to talk about the loan closing process. So the credit people have received the loan, they've processed the credit application, they've processed it through the center, and they have received an authorization. At that point in time, it goes to Todd and Jennifer. So Todd, I'll start with you. You've received an application that has received the letter of authorization.
Sure.
Now what happens?
Well, the first thing that happens is we start working on a closing conditions letter. We prepare that closing conditions letter based on a review of that authorization And, you know, just as important as that is, there's an important handoff with the loan officers work this loan file. They know what's going on. They know of any special conditions. They know of any special relationships. And just in the last 5-6 years, we started a deliberate conversation either in person or as we worked remote via paper, where they hand off that paper providing important details on the status of environmentals or appraisals or obstacles that they had. So Jennifer and I don't get into it cold. We have some context of the history of this loan, and that's valuable. From that, we prepare that closing conditions letter. And that closing conditions letter is the bank's and the borrower's roadmap. Essentially, what we've tried to do in that closing conditions letter is take the 17 pages of boilerplate from that authorization that the borrower's received and plucked out the requirements contained in that authorization that they need to meet, the bank and the borrower, in order for us to get that loan to closing and funding.
How many items are on the Jennifer? Are on your loan? Your closing conditions letter?
They're all different. Mm. Everybody has different requirements and needs they need to meet. Sometimes a few of them have been met before we get the loan, so we don't have to include everything. Mm-hmm. I would say there's probably 25 to 30 items on each list, divided into two parts: things you can turn in now and things you can turn in when it's more related to the complete project or the complete purchase.
Mm-hmm. So in relation to the loan closing letter, then we have an authorization from the SBA, which is good for how long?
Yeah, 4 years is the standard authorization is good for 4 years, which is longer than we need. But on a construction project, it's nice to have that much time. The only exception to that is if it is a debt refi without expansion. That is a straight debt refi. There is no expansion in terms of construction or adding on additional land. Those are good for 9 months.
9 months.
Yeah, and that's a pretty good clip. They extended that out years ago because it was shorter than I think it was six. And nine's about right for those on a straight refi like that.
Mm-hmm. And then is the 4 years a hard, fast number, or is there some wiggle room at the end of that for exceptional cases?
Sure, yeah, there is some wiggle room, and from time to time there are circumstances beyond our control, beyond the borrower's control, that requires we extend that out. And we've been successful in getting those extended out and on those unique situations. Typically, we look at extending them out at six-month increments. Once you get beyond that second six-month increment, the buck stops there, so to speak.
That's it. So it's six and six?
Yeah.
So the most it could ever be is five.
That's certainly the most we've ever gone is mm-hmm. five. I don't believe they will extend it beyond five.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then who authorizes those extensions at the SBA?
Yeah, that would go to the Fresno Servicing Center.
Is it Fresno?
Yeah. Yeah, we write them up, give them a good reason, provide them some financials, and then they approve them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Jennifer, kind of your roadmap is, and Todd's roadmap is the closing conditions letter, and as you said, all of those are different. So you're working with all of those different items. Some you may have had, some you don't have. So what is the process? And obviously, you're keeping track of all of that and juggling not just several balls, but hundreds in the air all the time. How do you keep it all straight?
That's a good question.
Well,
how do you keep it?
Your best. They get a letter at the beginning with the closing conditions letter and any attachments that they might need that are relevant to that loan, like a life insurance assignment form, the poster. Everybody gets a copy of that. On the letter, there may be some specific comments. If we have an appraisal but it needs a couple things added, we'll remind them. So we might have it, but it's not right. Can't be submitted yet because it would be declined. And then you hopefully have a phone conference with the lender and sometimes the borrower, and then you can have a conversation about how to get things turned in, when to turn them in, and to, you know, ask away with any questions. There's a lot of back and forth. Sometimes they're just really quiet at first, and then they come in and send you you know, 12, 15 documents. And then once you might get just a couple documents at a time. But every time there's a document that comes in, it gets reviewed, processed if it can, and they get an update that shows that we have this. Thank you. Here's the rest. If you have any other questions, just to let us know. So it's just continual back and forth. And that works.
Yeah. So for the listeners, if you can imagine, for the bankers that are listening and the borrowers that are listening statewide, is that they're dealing with maybe 100 closing conditions letters at the same time, all in different stages within the 4 years or the 5 years. And then a lot of those documents within the loan closing conditions letter as well are time sensitive. Todd?
They get stale dated. Yeah, they get stale dated on an appraisal or environmental. We get a window to get those approved. And so we've done things like we create calendar events to follow up with the bank and check on them. If you have them, send them, just so they don't become stale dated. Yeah,
absolutely.
And Jennifer does a great job of updating that closing conditions letter and marking items off. And then they circulate back and forth between the two of them to kind of manage where that's at.
What an organizational challenge.
Yep. A lot of times the lenders will have an assistant too, so they're included as well, and they'll be sending me documents and having conversations about what's needed, and they sort of get used to the process if they've done a few. They really get the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I noted earlier, this is episode one in a series. We will have a number of these different shows. One question that we received here fairly often is the issue of the environmental compliance with the loan. Could both of you speak as to what the minimum is?
Yeah.
And can those become stale?
Yeah, you know, environmental, I always qualify environmental, or I don't pretend to be an environmental professional. I pretend to know the SBA requirements. We got those down. We know what's required. And if your project involves real estate, then you are going to have to participate in that investigation. There will be some level of investigation, and the nature of that investigation depends on the property's history, the amount of our loan. Those two things, as much as any, will dictate what level investigation is required. The lowest level would be just an environmental questionnaire. They can complete an environmental questionnaire, and if that reflects the property's prior use and current use don't present any risk, and the loan amount is low enough on our end, then we might get away with just that questionnaire, and it's really easy. There's not a lot of those that fit both those parameters, are there, Jennifer?
No, there are not.
What is the dollar threshold, Jennifer?
I believe it is $150,000 for our loan.
$150,000.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. And then they need to do an RSRA report.
And then, so then the questionnaire, does it ever become stale 4 years later?
We submit those when we receive them within a year, right?
Yes. If we're getting in danger of anything not coming back right, like we need to be added as a user, we need a letter, we'll send those in just to kind of hold our place in line. Uh-huh. I don't like to do that because then you get declined and that's not a good thing, but it kind of keeps it going. Mm-hmm. And you can submit the extra pieces when you get them.
Mm-hmm. And then, Todd, maybe you can speak to this. So then, if something is detected in the investigation, then the next level, is it phase one?
Yep, the next level. So the next level you go up is an RSRA. You know, that's kind of where most of our projects generally start, unless they send us a questionnaire. And we encourage people to send the questionnaire earlier than later, because we can look at that and look at that in their NAICS code and see if we think an RSRA is going to be sufficient. That's where almost all of them start, is that RSRA level, record search risk assessment. And if that comes back reflecting a low risk, the environmental survey completed by the borrower, if those come back looking clean, then Jennifer will submit those, and we hope for a SBA approval of that environmental at that point in time. If they present problems or identify problems, then it goes up from there to a phase one.
Mm-hmm. So what's the process between going to an RSRA that indicates an issue to phase one? Do you initiate?
No, if it comes back and they need to have one, a lot of times they know and they just continue on and get the phase one and then turn that in. And they'll let me know, hey, the report turned up some findings we need to investigate. And then sometimes they send it without, and you know, we can send it in, but we'll let them know that it's probably going to be screened out, needing a phase one. And that's good information to have, because then they can actually see what the SBA said about what mm-hmm. they found.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, so then, if you, then the next level after phase one is?
Phase two.
Phase two.
Yep.
You don't want to be in phase two.
No.
No, not you the best do not. Place. No, and you know, if you've got a, if you're working with a good environmental firm, in our experience, they'll tell you, you know, we can do an RSRA, but in the end of the RSRA, we're going to be recommending a phase one. So if your environmental professional is working with you in that respect, they'll skip the RSRA and not bill you the $550 for that, and they'll just push you right to a phase one.
Right to a phase one.
Without doing that RSRA. Is that a fair summary?
Yes. Yeah, yes, they experience? Do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then currently the RSRA is about $500, $550.
Typically around that range, mm-hmm. yes.
And then a phase one is, do you know?
A couple $1,000 maybe.
Yeah, I think $1,500 might be on the low end, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think our borrowers and bankers will find this very interesting. Then phase three is then remediation?
The phase one could require some degree of remediation.
Oh, really?
Phase two could recommend some nature of remediation. And at that point, I'm in dialogue with the environmental professional looking for their environmental professional experience to help me and Jennifer prepare what we need to in order mm-hmm. to get the SBA approval.
Mm-hmm. Another question, and maybe I should have asked prior to talking about the loan closing conditions letter, was eligible costs. Things that are eligible. That is one that really causes Jennifer and Todd and Jennifer a lot of angst.
Mostly Todd.
And it really, it's like almost like a major league umpire behind the plate calling balls and strikes.
That's a good description
of a really competitive pitcher. And so Todd, could you tell the listeners, when you look at that, what are you looking for eligible, or maybe you're looking for uneligible?
Yeah, no, sure. Well,
what are we doing?
The project costs are a big part of completing. Getting us to closing and funding. And if your project's a straight purchase, it's easy. You know, you get us a settlement statement, you get us a loan ledger reflecting your disbursements. In most cases on a straight purchase, that's all we're going to need. You won't hardly hear from me. If you're talking about a construction project or a renovation, there's going to be more involved. And the larger your construction project or your renovation project, the more that's involved. A good place to start is always a settlement statement if you're acquiring land. Always your draw summaries, your loan histories, those two things. Your draw summary showing just a description of who was paid and how much. Your loan ledger reflecting the total amount disbursed, the date it was disbursed, and your principal outstanding. Those things are key to the review. And I'm looking to include anything I can within SBA limits. And we've gotten good over the years of trading one item for another, ineligible item for an eligible item. So we work real hard to make it work. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is an involved process. Mm-hmm. That might be the only time, frankly, I talk to the lender. If things have gone well, the only time I talk to the lender is for project costs. Mm-hmm.
And this is for Jennifer or Todd. Is there a point in time where a cost becomes ineligible due to just simply the lapse of time?
Not for us. It could be perhaps there used to be a 9-month rule for the application guys.
And that's no longer.
They eliminated that, didn't they?
Right.
Yeah.
And so the 9-month rule was that if you had incurred an expense prior to the 9 months, it wasn't eligible. So it had to be fresh within the 9-month mm-hmm. period, and then it became stale.
Okay.
I think mm-hmm. was the deal. Another one that I think that the banks and the borrowers would be really interested to hear from both of you on is proof of equity injection.
Like Todd said, the settlement statement is uh-huh. a great one that can knock off an entire category. It's all that's needed. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And you can use real estate if you purchase it in a certain sequences. Would you talk to that?
Yeah. So if they have Real estate's always good for equity. If you're just purchasing it, we'll use the cost and you know, whatever you bring to closing on that settlement statement. If you've owned it for more than 2 years, then we can look at the appraised value, less what you owe on it for your equity on it. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, we'd be looking for checks the borrower wrote. So the fewer checks I have to get, the better off it is for everybody. It's easier. So if the borrower settlement statement's a great place, if they it's a construction, they paid for some construction costs, if they wrote a few checks to the general contractor for an AIA, easy sources for equity there too.
And then TIF money is can be used for equity injection, and TIF is right. Probably and that whole another show, but tax increment financing can be used.
It's easy for us because because it is equity. All I look to see is that they use the TIF money for eligible costs, construction, that the purchase, the real estate, professional fees. I'm just mm-hmm. looking to see where it went. Mm-hmm.
We've mm-hmm. had several of those lately.
We have.
Mm-hmm. And how many now? When we use the terminology in subsequent episodes and in today's episode, we refer to it. They refer to it as the closing pipeline. Jennifer, can you talk to the closing pipeline about how many projects you have in there now, and what you would say? A second question would be, what would be maybe the average length of time that it's been in the closing pipeline, depending?
As far as I know, because there's so many that come in, get approved, and then we close them, so it's hard to balance that out. But I think there's 85 active.
Active.
Yeah, that means we haven't closed them to get ready for funding.
Oh. And to put that in perspective, I would say an average-sized bank in the state of Nebraska in their commercial loan department would have half a dozen, maybe six, maybe 10, maybe none. And you've got 80 that are in this like almost like an oil pipeline, if you can imagine, and they're flowing.
Yes.
Along.
Yep, and those are the 80 loans that I get documents in daily, multiple times a day.
Multiple times.
Balance that out with the loans you're trying to get closed mm-hmm. that have been sending you documents, and then the loans you have closed and you're trying to finish getting them to funding. So mm-hmm. it's a big balancing act.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure the listeners are wondering, again, organizational tools that may be available for an incredible data management system. All I know is it's called CDC Ventures, and
yes. It's a good program. We can save all of our loan documents in there. We have two different ways to save documents in there, and then you can go back and refer to them and do anything you need, print them, save them, send them to anybody else you need to. And I personally keep everybody who has a loan in their own folder, so each debenture has their own inbox in my inbox. Mm. I tend to keep too much, but that comes in handy.
Wow. Wow. And then for those of you that may have been, or maybe you're listening to the show a little bit later, Todd is an attorney, and he was in private practice before he was here. So from a legal standpoint, we're one of the few CDCs in the United States to have an on-staff attorney. And then Todd, can you explain, so you can never have enough lawyers looking at this.
We've got a lot.
A lot.
We do.
So Todd's eyes have looked at it.
Correct.
And then the federal law requires that we have a third-party legal opinion.
That's right. Every one of them.
Every one of them. Mm-hmm. And that's Justin Sheldon.
Yes, sir.
In Omaha. So a second set of eyes have looked at it.
Correct.
And then the SBA district office has an attorney.
That's right. Greg Stratman. Yes, sir.
Now we've got six separate eyeballs, three sets. And Jennifer's like a real estate attorney, so let's call it eight.
All right.
Now we've got eight. And then is there another one somewhere that I don't know about that's looking at this?
Well, your file could be selected for audit. You know,
yes.
Inside baseball, some of them are selected for audit, and it's a cadre of SBA counsel who would look at that. So it could be reviewed by a fourth.
By a fourth.
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
This is why I get so picky when documents come in. They have to be right. It's not just me being personal or picky to other people. You know, it's always it has to be right because there are so many lawyers, and I've said that look at them, and we can also get in an audit, and they understand, and they'll revise it and send it in the way it should have been, and maybe they just left something off,
mm-hmm.
the dates for the minutes or a signature here or there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So as we were referring to a piece of software that we subscribe to called CDC Ventures, that's a nationwide company, and I would guess maybe half of the CDCs I've heard use it.
Or more.
Or more.
Yeah.
Without it, it would be almost impossible.
Yes.
To conduct business and do the heavy volume that you guys are doing.
Yes.
So CDC Ventures assists with if they have some templates in there, obviously. And how often is that updated? CDC Ventures.
I'm not sure if they have a set schedule, but it seems pretty seamless. We've never been shut down for it.
So they've never had a template in there that was inaccurate.
They do a great job of keeping
things updated. They do a great job.
They do. And then we've got custom templates that we generate out of those.
Uh-huh.
For our documents. So everything uh-huh. comes from there.
Uh-huh. Now, Todd, you when these files come in, obviously they can involve leases, they can involve different types of corporations, LLCs and all of that. Are you ever asked, obviously you're not in private practice here,
right.
You're practicing here for,
right.
So anything that you would do for those files is just a complimentary unbinding opinion, right?
Right.
And some of the leases, you do end up looking at them just to see if they're correct and to maybe give them a suggestion as to how that needs to be structured.
That's right.
And you're not writing the lease and you're not opining on the lease.
Right. We try to help folks with their lease or whatever the documents are to facilitate a loan closing to make it as easy on them as possible. And we help along the way.
So Todd and Jennifer are looking for every single little cubbyhole, every advantage to squirrel these loans in to get them to fit. Now, we had a record. You guys were on a record loan closing clip, and in this next cycle is going to be maybe eight?
We just closed eight. So
eight.
Yes, we're still working on those.
Eight loans. There are CDCs that don't do eight loans in a year. Many. Many. So That's quite remarkable. I think we'll conclude there for episode one of the SBA 504 Show Loan Closing Series. The next time we tape, which will be in about a week to 10 days, we have some other specifics that we'd like to get into. And one of them, I think, that the borrowers and the bank would like to know is that at the point of submission of a completed loan file that's been approved and it's ready for the debenture sale, what is the time frame, the calendar of when these people are actually going to get their money?
Sure.
Which is, I think, the goal.
So, always.
So next episode, we're going to look at some time frames.
Excellent.
Of that and look at calendars too. So when people are listening to the show, maybe it will spurn a memory or something that they can think, hey, we've got to get this, hopefully, because you don't close the loan and get the money the same day.
We don't come with checks.
Not with checks.
No, we sure don't.
And so.
And it doesn't matter what day of the month you close on. There's only one funding date per month.
And yes. And then there's a deadline that obviously the district council has to meet and wants to meet. And
that's right.
So not only are you dealing with possibly the stale documents, but timing deadlines with the SBA in Omaha. And deadlines for him to get it to the bond sales
right.
company. So, with that, we'd like to thank Jennifer and Todd for being on episode one of the show, and we look forward to the next episode. And at that point in time, we're going to try and figure out, is Jennifer living in Lincoln? Or Omaha.
Yes.
It's a mystery.
It will be helpful for me to know where I go when I leave today.
Thank you both and have a great day.
Thank you.
This has been a production of the Nebraska Economic Development Corporation. All rights reserved.